The coach thundered through pine trees by a lake, struck a tree root, lost a wheel, and skidded to a halt on its side as the horses bolted. Igor picked himself up, lurched to the coach, and raised a door.
"Sorry about that," he said. "I'm afraid this always happens when the master isn't on board. Everyone all right down there?"
A hand grabbed him by the throat.
"You could have warned us," Nanny growled. "We were thrown all over the place. Where the hell are we? Is this Lake?"
A match flared and Igor lit a torch.
"We're near the castle," he said.
"Whose?"
"The Magpies."
"We're near the vampire's castle?"
"Yes. I think the old master did something to the road here. The wheels always come off as sure as eggs is eggs. Brings in the visitors," he said.
"It didn't occur to you to mention it," said Nanny, climbing out and giving Magrat a hand.
"Sorry, it's been a busy day."
Nanny took the torch. The flames illuminated a crude sign nailed to a tree.
"Don't go near the castle," Nanny read. "Nice of them to put an arrow pointing the way to it, too."
"Oh, the master did that," said Igor. "Otherwise people wouldn't notice it."
Nanny peered into the gloom.
"And who's in the castle now?"
"A few servants.
Will they let us in?"
"That's not a problem."
Igor fished in his noisome shirt and pulled out a very big key on a string.
"We're going to go into the castle," said Magrat.
"Looks like the only place around," said Nanny Og, heading up the track. "The coach is wrecked. We're miles from anywhere else. Do you want to keep the baby out all night?"
"A castle's a castle. It'll have locks. All the vampires are in Lunkra, and,
well, it's what Esme would have done. I feels it in me blood."
A little way off, something howled. Nanny looked at Igor.
"Werewolf," she said. "That's right. Not a good idea to hang around, then."
She pointed to a sign painted on a rock.
"Don't take this quickest route to the castle," she read aloud. "You've got to admire a mind like that. Definitely a student of human nature."
"Won't there be a lot of ways in?"
said Magrat as they walked past a sign that said, "Don't go near the coach park 20 yards on your left."
"Igor," said Nanny.
"Vampires used to fight amongst themselves," said Igor. "There's only one way in."
"Oh, all right, if we must," said Magrat. "You take the rocker and use nappy bag and the teddies.
And the thing that goes round and round and plays noises when she pulls the string."
A sign near the drawbridge said, "Last chance not to go near the castle."
And Nanny Og laughed and laughed.
"The Count's not going to be very happy about you, Igor," she said as he unlocked the doors.
"Sod him," he said. "I'm going to pack up my stuff and head for Blinth. There's always a job for an Igor up there. More lightning strikes per year than anywhere in the mountains, they say."
Nanny Og wiped her eye.
"Good job we're soaked already," she said. "All right, let's get in. And Igor, if you haven't been straight with us, I'll have your guts for garters."
Igor looked down bashfully.
"Oh, that's more than a man could possibly hope for," he murmured.
Magrat giggled, and Igor pushed open the door and hurriedly shuffled inside.
"What?" said Nanny.
"Haven't you noticed the looks he's been giving you?"
said Magrat as they followed the lurching figure.
"What, him?" said Nanny.
"Could be carrying a torch for you," said Magrat.
"I thought it was just to see where he's going," said Nanny, a little bit of panic in her voice. "I mean, I haven't got my best drawers on or anything."
"I think he's a bit of a romantic, actually," said Magrat.
"Oh, I don't know, I really don't," said Nanny. "I mean, it's flattering and everything, but I really don't think I could be going out with a man with a limp."
"Limp what?"
Nanny Og had always considered herself unshockable, but there's no such thing. Shocks can come from unexpected directions.
"I am a married woman," said Magrat, smiling at her expression.
And it felt good, just once, to place a small tin tack in the path of Nanny's carefree amble through life.
"But is Verence, you know, all right in the,
Oh, yes, everything's fine. But now I understand what your jokes were about."
"What, all of them?"
said Nanny, like someone who'd found all the aces removed from their favourite pack of cards.
Well, not the one about the priest, the old woman and the rhinoceros.
I should just about hope so, said Nanny. I didn't understand that one till I was 40.
Igor limped back. There's just the servants, he said. You could stay down in my quarters, in the old tower. There's thick doors. Mrs. Ogg would really like that, said Magrat. She was saying just now, what good legs you've got, weren't you, Nanny? Do you want some? Said Igor earnestly, leading the way up the steps. I've got plenty, and I could do with the space in the ice house.
You what? Said Nanny, stopping dead.
I'm your man if there's any organ you need, said Igor.
There was a strangled coughing noise from Magrat.
You've got bits of people stored on ice, said Nanny, horrified. Bits of strange people chopped up.
I'm not taking another step.
Now Igor looked horrified.
Not strange, he said. Family.
You chopped up your family?
Nanny backed away. Igor waved his hands frantically.
It's the tradition, he said. Every Igor leaves his body to the family. Why waste good organs? Look at my uncle Igor. He died of buffaloes, so there was a perfectly good heart and some kidneys going begging. Plus, he'd still got Grandad's hands, and they were damn good hands, let me tell you.
He sniffed.
I wish I had them. He was a great surgeon.
Well, I know every family says things like, he's got his father's eyes, Nanny began.
No, my second cousin Igor got them.
But who does the cutting and sewing? Said Magrat.
I do. And Igor learns household surgery on his father's knee, said Igor, and then practices on his grandfather's kidneys.
Excuse me, said Nanny, what did you say your uncle died of?
Buffaloes, said Igor, unlocking another door.
He broke out in them?
A herd fell on him. A freak accident. We don't talk about it.
Sorry, are you telling us you do surgery on yourself? Said Magrat.
It's not hard when you know what you're doing. Sometimes you need a mirror, of course, and it helps if someone can put a finger on the knot.
Isn't it painful?
Oh, no. I always tell them to take it away just before I pull the strings tight.
The door creaked open. It was a long, tortured, groaning noise. In fact, there was more creak than door, and it went on just a few seconds after the door had stopped.
That sounds dreadful, said Nanny.
Thank you. It took days to get right. Creaks like that don't just happen by themselves.
There was a woof from the darkness, and something leapt at Igor, knocking him off his feet.
Get off, you big soppy!
It was a dog, or several dogs, rolled, as it were, into one. There were four legs, and they were nearly all the same length, although not, Magrat noted, all the same colour. There was one head, although the left ear was black and pointed, while the right ear was brown and white and flopped. It was a very enthusiastic animal in the department of slobber.
This is Scraps, said Igor,
fighting to get to his feet in a hail of excited paws.
He's a silly old thing.
Scraps, yes, said Nanny. Good name, good name.
He's 78 years old, said Igor,
leading the way down a winding staircase.
Some of him.
He's very neat stitching, said Magrat. He looks well on it, too. Happy as a dog with two... Oh, I see, he does have two.
I had one spare, said Igor,
leading the way with Scraps bounding along beside him.
I thought, he's so happy with one, just think of the fun he could have with two.
Nanny Ogg's mouth didn't even get half open.
Don't you even think of saying anything, Githa Ogg, snapped Magrat.
Me?
Said Nanny innocently.
Yes, and you were. I could see you.
You know he was talking about tails, not anything else.
Oh, I thought about that long ago, said Igor. It's obvious. Saves wear and tear, plus you can use one while you're replacing the other. I experimented on myself.
Their footsteps echoed on the stairs.
Now, what are we talking about here exactly?
Said Nanny in a quiet, I'm only asking out of interest tone of voice.
Hearts, said Igor.
Oh, two hearts.
You've got two hearts?
Yes.
The other one belonged to poor Mr. Thwines down at the thawmill. But his wife said it was no use to him after the accident.
what with him not having a head to go with it. "You're a bit of a self-made man on the quiet, aren't you?" said Magrat.
"Who did your brain?" said Nanny.
"Can't do brains yourself," said Igor.
"Only you've got all those stitches."
"Oh, I put a metal plate in my head," said Igor, "and a wire down my neck all the way to my boots. I got fed up with all those lightning strikes. Here we are."
He unlocked another groaning door.
"My little place."
It was a dank, vaulted room, clearly lived in by someone who didn't spend a lot of social time there. There was a fireplace with a dog basket in front of it, and a bed with a mattress and one blanket. Crude cupboards lined one wall.
"There's a well under that cover there," he said, "and there's a privy through there."
"What's through that door?"
said Nanny, pointing to one with heavy bolts across it.
"Nothing," said Igor.
Nanny shot him a glance, but the bolts were very firmly on this side.
"This looks like a crypt," she said, "with a fireplace."
"When the old count was alive, he liked to get warm of an evening before going out," said Igor. "Golden days, them was. I wouldn't give you tuppence for this lot. Do you know, they wanted me to get rid of Scraps."
Scraps leapt up and tried to lick Nanny's face.
"I saw Lacrimosa kick him once," said Igor darkly.
He rubbed his hands together.
"Can I get you ladies anything to eat?"
"No,"
said Nanny and Magrat together. Scraps tried to lick Igor. He was a dog with a lot of lick to share.
"Scraps, play dead," said Igor.
The dog dropped and rolled over with his legs in the air.
"See," said Igor, "he remembers."
"Won't we be cornered down here if the magpies come?" said Magrat.
"They don't come down here. It's not modern enough for them," said Igor. "And there's ways out if they do."
Magrat glanced at the bolted door. It didn't look like the kind of way out anyone would want to take. "What about weapons?" she said. "I shouldn't think there'd be any anti-vampire stuff in a vampire's castle, would there?"
"Why, certainly," said Igor.
"There is.
As much as you want. The old master was very keen on that. When we had visitors expected, he always said, 'Igor, make certain the windows are clean and there's lots of lemons and bits of ornament that can be turned into religious symbols around the place.' He enjoyed it when people played by the rules. Very fair, the old master."
"Yeah, but that'd mean he'd die, wouldn't it?"
said Nanny. She opened a cupboard and a stack of wrinkled lemons fell out.
Igor shrugged. "You win some, you lose some," he said. "The old master used to say, 'Igor, the day vampires win all the time, that's the day we'll be knocked back beyond return.' Mind you, he got annoyed when people pinched his socks. He'd say, 'Sod, that was silk, $10 a pair in Aunt Moorpork.'"
"And he probably spent a lot of money on blotting paper, too," said Nanny.
Another cupboard revealed a rack of steaks, along with a mallet and a simple anatomical diagram with an X over the heart area.
"The chart was my idea, Mrs. Ogg," said Igor proudly. "The old master got fed up with people just hammering the stakes in any old way. He said he didn't mind the dying, that was quite restful, but he did object to looking like a colander."
"You're a bright chap, aren't you, Igor?" said Nanny.
Igor beamed. "I've got a good brain in my head."
"Choose it yourself, did you?" "No, only joking. You can't do brains."
"I've got a distant cousin at Unseen University, you know."
"Really? What's he do there?"
"Floats around in his jar," said Igor proudly.
"Shall I show you the holy water cellar? The old master built up a very good collection."
"Sorry? A vampire collected holy water?" said Magrat.
"I think I'm beginning to understand," said Nanny. "He was a sportsman, right?"
"Exactly."
"And a good sportsman always gives the valiant prey a decent chance," said Nanny, "even if it means I'm in a cellar of Chateau Neuve de Pope." "Sounds an intelligent bird, your old boy. Not like this new one. He's just clever."
"I don't follow you," said Magrat.
"Being killed is nothing to a vampire," said Nanny. "They always find a way of coming back. Everyone knows that who knows anything about vampires. If they're not too hard to kill and it's all a bit of an adventure for people, well, like as not, they'll just stake him and chuck him in the river and go home. Then he has a nice restful decade or so, being dead, and comes back from the grave and away he goes again.
That way he never gets totally wiped out, and the lads of the village get some healthy exercise.
The magpies will come after us, said Magrat, clutching the baby to her. They'll see we're not in Lancre, and they'll know we couldn't have gone down to the plains. They'll find the smashed coach, too. They'll find us, Nanny.
Nanny looked at the array of jars and bottles and the stakes neatly organised in order of size.
It'll take them a little while, she said. We've got time to get prepared.
She turned around with a bottle of blessed water in one hand, a crossbow loaded with a wooden bolt, and a bag of musty lemons in her mouth.
Okay, she said.
Pardon? Said Magrat.
Nanny spat out the lemons. Now, we'll try things my way, she said. I'm not good at thinking, like Granny, but I'm bloody good at acting like me. Headology's for them as can handle it. Let's kick some bat.
The wind soughed across the moors on the edge of Lancre and hissed through the heather. Around some old mounds, half buried in brambles, it shook the wet branches of a single thorn tree and shredded the curling smoke that drifted up through the roots. There was a single scream. Down below, the Nac Mac Feagle were doing their best, but strength is not the same as weight and mass, and even with Pixies hanging onto every limb, and Big Aggie herself sitting on Verence's chest, he was still hard to control.
"I think maybe the drink was a wee bitty too trackle," said Big Aggie's man, looking down at Verence's bloodshot eyes and foaming mouth. "I'm saying maybe it was wrong just giving him 50 times more than we tick. There's no use to it."
Big Aggie shrugged. In the far corner of the barrow, half a dozen pixies backed out of the hole they'd hacked into the next chamber, dragging a sword. For bronze, it was quite well preserved. The old chieftains of Lancre reckoned to be buried with their weapons in order to fight their enemies in the next world. And since you didn't become a chieftain of ancient Lancre without sending a great many enemies into the next world, they liked to take weapons that could be relied upon to last. Under the direction of the old pixie, they manoeuvred it within reach of Verence's flailing hand.
"Ah, yes, great," said Big Aggie's man. "Yin, tan, tetra."
The feagle leapt away in every direction. Verence rose almost vertically, bounced off the roof, grabbed the sword, hacked madly until he'd cut a hole through to the outside world, and escaped into the night. The pixies, clustered around the walls of the barrow, turned their eyes to their kelder. Big Aggie nodded.
"Big Aggie says ye'd best see him come to nae harm," said the old pixie.
A 1,000 small but very sharp weapons waved in the smoky air.
"Hoodens! Kill him a Nirk McFeagle!"
A few seconds later the chamber was empty. Nanny hurried across the castle's main hall, burdened with stakes, and stopped dead.
"What the hell's that thing?" she said. "Takes up a whole wall."
"Oh, that was the old Count's pride and joy," said Igor. "He wasn't very modern, he always said, but the century of the fruit bat had its compensations. Sometimes he'd play with it for hours on end."
It was an organ, or possibly what an organ hoped to be when it grew up, because it dominated the huge room. A music lover to the core, Nanny couldn't help trotting over to inspect it. It was black, its pipes framed and enclosed in intricate ebony fretwork, with the stops and keyboards made of dead elephant.
"How does it work?" she said. "Water power," said Igor proudly. "There's an underground river. The master had this made specially to his own design."
Nanny ran her fingers over a brass plate screwed above the keyboard. It read, "Listen to the children of tonight. What wonderful music they make." Manufactured by Bergholt Stutley Johnson, Ankh-Morpork.
"It's a Johnson," she breathed. "I haven't got my hands on a Johnson for ages."
She looked closer.
"What's this? Scream 1, Thunderclap 14, Wolf Howl 5. There's a whole set of stops just marked creaky floors. Can't you play music on this thing?"
"Oh, yes. But the old master was more interested in effects."
There was still a dust-covered sheet of music on the stand, which someone had been filling in carefully with many crossings out. "Return of the Bride of the Revenge of the Son of Count Magpier," Nanny said aloud, noting that "from 20,000 fathoms?" question mark had been written in subsequently and then crossed out. "Sonata for Thunderstorm Trapdoors and Young Woman in Skimpy Clothing."
"Bit of an artist too, then, your old master."
"In a special way," said Igor wistfully.
Nanny stepped back.
"Magrat's going to be safe, isn't she?" she said, picking up the stakes again.
"It's a mob-proof door," said Igor. "And Scraps is 9/38 Rottweiler."
"Which parts, as a matter of interest?"
"Two legs, one ear, lots of tubes and lower jaw," said Igor promptly as they hurried off again.
"Yes, but he's got a spaniel brain," said Nanny.
"It's in the bone," said Igor. "He holds people in his jaws and beats them senseless with his tails."
"He wags people to death?"
"Sometimes he drowns them in dribble," said Igor.
The rooftops of Escrow loomed out of the darkness as the vampires drifted lower. A few windows were glowing with candlelight when Agnes's feet touched the ground. Vlad dropped down beside her.
"Of course, you can't see it at its best in this weather," he said. "Some quite good architecture in the town square, and a very fine town hall. Father paid for the clock."
"Really?"
"And the bell tower, naturally. Local labour, of course."
"Vampires have a lot of cash, do they?" said Agnes. The town looked quite large, and pretty much like the country towns on the plains, save for a certain amount of gingerbread carving on the eaves.
"Well, the family has always owned land," said Vlad, ignoring the sarcasm. "The money mounts up, you know, over the centuries, and obviously we've not enjoyed a particularly active social life."
"Or spent much on food," said Agnes.
"Yes, yes, very good."
A bell started to toll somewhere above them.
"Now you'll see," said Vlad, "and you'll understand."
Granny Weatherwax opened her eyes. There were flames roaring right in front of her.
"Oh," she said, "so be it, then." "Ah, feeling better, are we?" said Oates.
Her head spun round. Then she looked down at the steam rising from her dress. Oates ducked between the branches of two firs and threw another armful of dead wood on the flames. It hissed and spluttered.
"How long was I resting?" said Granny.
"About, half an hour, I'd say." Red light and black shadows danced among the trees. The rain had turned to sleet, but it was flashing into steam overhead.
"You did well to get a fire going in this murk," said Granny.
I thank Om for it," said Oates.
"Very kind of him, I'm sure, but we've got to get on." Granny tried to stand up. "Not far now, all downhill."
"The mule ran away," said Oates.
"We got feet, haven't we? I feel better for the rest. The fire's put a bit of life into me."
"It's too dark and far too wet. Wait until morning."
Granny pulled herself up.
"No, find a stick or something I can lean on. Go on."
"Well, there's a hazel grove just along the slope, but..."
"Just the thing. A good bit of hazel. Well, don't just stand there. I'm feeling better every minute. Off you go."
He disappeared into the dripping shadows. Granny flapped her skirts in front of the blaze to circulate some warm air, and something small and white flew up from the ashes, dancing in the fire and sleet. She picked it up from the moss where it had landed. It was a piece of thin paper, the charred corner of a page. She could just make out in the red light the words, "Of Om, aid unto Ossory Smote." The paper was attached to a burnt strip of leather binding. She regarded it for a while and then dropped it carefully into the flames as the sound of crackling twigs indicated Oates's return.
"Can you even find the way in all this?"
he said, handing her a long hazel pole.
"Yes. You go on one side of me and I've got this staff, then it's just a walk in the woods, eh?"
"You don't look better."
"Young man, if we're going to wait for me to look interesting, we'll be here for years."
She raised a hand and the wowhawk flew down out of the shadows.
"Good thing you were able to get a fire going all the same," she said without turning round.
"I have always found that if I put my trust in Om, a way will be found," said Oates, hurrying after her.
"I reckon Om helps those who help themselves," said Granny.
Through the town of Escrow, the windows glowed as lamps were lit, and there was the sound of doors being unbolted. Over all, the bell went on ringing out through the fog.
"Normally, we congregate in the town square," said Vlad.
"It's the middle of the night," said Agnes.
"Yes, but it doesn't happen very often, and our covenant says never more than twice in a month," said Vlad. "Do you see how prosperous this place is? People are safe in Escrow. They've seen reason. No shutters on the windows, do you see?
They don't have to bar their windows or hide in the cellar, which I have to admit is what people do in the less well-regulated areas of our country. They exchanged fear for security. He stumbled and steadied himself against a wall. Then he rubbed his forehead. "Sorry, I felt a little strange. What was I saying?"
"How should I know?" snapped Agnes. "You were talking about how happy everyone is because the vampires visit or something."
"Oh, yes, yes. Because of cooperation, not enmity. Because..." He pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and wiped his face. "Because... well, you'll see. Is it rather cold here?"
"Just clammy," said Agnes.
"Let's get to the square," Vlad muttered. "I'm sure I shall feel better."
It was just ahead. Torches had been lit. People had congregated there, most of them with blankets across their shoulders or a coat over their nightclothes, standing around in aimless groups like people who'd heard the fire alarm but hadn't seen the smoke. One or two of them caught sight of Vlad, and there was a certain amount of coughing and shuffling. Other vampires were descending through the mist. The Count landed gently and nodded to Agnes.
"Ah, Miss Knit," he said vaguely. "Are we all here, Vlad?"
The bell stopped. A moment later, Lacrimosa descended.
"You've still got her?" she said to Vlad, raising her eyebrows. "Oh, well."
"I will just have a brief chat to the mayor," said the Count. "He appreciates being kept informed."
Agnes watched him walk towards a small dumpy man, who, despite getting out of bed in the middle of the wet night, seemed to have had the foresight to put on a gold chain of office. She noticed the vampires taking up positions in a line in front of the bell tower, about 4 or 5 feet apart. They joked and called out to one another, except for Lacrimosa, who was glaring directly at her. The Count was deep in conversation with the mayor, who was staring down at his feet. Now, across the square, the people were beginning to form lines. A couple of small children pulled away from their parents' hands and chased one another up and down the lines of people, laughing. And the suspicion bloomed slowly in Agnes like a great black red-edged rose. Vlad must have felt her body stiffen, because his grip tightened on her arm.
"I know what you're thinking," he began.
"You don't know what I'm thinking, but I'll tell you what I'm thinking," she said, trying to keep the tremble out of her voice.
"Listen, it could be so much worse. It used to be so much worse."
The Count bustled.
"Good news," he said. 3 children have just turned 12.
He smiled at Agnes.
"We have a little ceremony before the main lottery. A rite of passage, as it were. I think they look forward to it, to tell you the truth."
"He's watching to see how you react," said Perdita. "Vlad is just stupid, and Lacrimosa would weave your hair into a face flannel if she had the chance. But this one will go for the throat if you so much as blink at the wrong time. So don't blink at the wrong time, thank you, because even figments of the imagination want to live." But Agnes felt the terror rising around her. And it was wrong, the wrong kind of terror. A numbing, cold, sick feeling that froze her where she stood. She had to do something, do anything, break its horrible grip. It was Vlad who spoke.
"It's nothing dramatic," he said quickly. "A little drop of blood. Father went to the school and explained all about citizenship."
"How nice," she croaked. "Do they get a badge?" It must have been Perdita behind that. She couldn't imagine Agnes being so tasteless, even in the cause of sarcasm.
"Ah, no, but what a good idea," said the Count, giving her another quick smile. "Yes, perhaps a badge or a small plaque, something to be treasured in later life. I shall make a mental note of this. And so, let us begin. Ah, the mayor has assembled the dear children."
There was a shout somewhere at the back of the crowd, and for a moment Agnes caught sight of a man trying to press forward. The mayor nodded at a couple of the nearby men. They hurried back into the crowd. There was a scuffle in the shadows. She thought she heard a woman scream, suddenly muffled. A door slammed. As the mayor turned back, he met Agnes's stare. She looked away, not wanting to see that expression. People were good at imagining hells, and some they occupied while they were alive.
"Shall we get on?" said the Count.
"Will you let go of my arm, Vlad?" said Agnes sweetly.
"They're just waiting for you to react," whispered Perdita.
"Oh," said Agnes inside her head, "so I should just stand here and watch, like everybody else?
I just thought I'd point it out. What's been done to them? They're like pigs queuing for Hogswatch."
"I think they saw reason," said Agnes.
"Oh, well, just wipe that smile off Lacrimosa's face. That's all I ask."
They could move very fast. Even a scream wouldn't work. She might be able to get in one good wallop, and that would be it. And perhaps she'd wake up as a vampire and not know the difference between good and evil. But that wasn't the point. The point was here and now, because here and now she did. She could see every drop of moisture hanging in the air, smell the wood smoke from damped-down fires, hear the rats in the thatch of the houses. Her senses were working overtime to make the most of the last few seconds.
"I don't see why,"
Lacrimosa's voice cut through the mist like a saw. Agnes blinked. The girl had reached her father and was glaring at him.
"Why do you always start?"
she demanded.
"Lacrimosa, what has got into you? I am the head of the clan."
"Oh, really? Forever?"
The Count looked astonished.
"Well, yes, of course. So we'll always be pushed around by you, forever. We'll just be your children, forever."
"My dear, what do you think you—"
"And don't try that voice on me. That only works on the meat. So I'll be sent to my room for being disobedient. Forever."
"We did let you have your own rack?"
Yes, and for that I have to nod and smile and be nice with mead."
"Don't you dare talk to your father like that," screamed the Countess.
"And don't talk about Agnes like that," snarled Vlad.
"Did I use the word Agnes? Did I refer to her in any way?" said Lacrimosa coldly. "I don't believe I did. I wouldn't dream of mentioning her at all."
"I can't be having with this arguing," shouted the Count.
"That's it, isn't it?" said Lacrimosa.
"We don't argue. We just do what you say forever."
"We agreed."
"No, you agreed, and no one disagreed with you. Vlad was right."
"Indeed," said the Count, turning to his son. "Right about what, pray?" Vlad's mouth opened and shut once or twice as he hastily assembled a coherent sentence.
"I may have mentioned that the whole Lancre business might be considered unwise."
"Oh," said the Countess, "you know so much about wisdom all of a sudden, and you're barely 200.
"Unwise?" said the Count.
"I'd say stupid," said Lacrimosa. "Little badges, gifts. We don't give anything, we're vampires. We take what we want, like this."
She reached out, grabbed a man standing near her, and turned, mouth open and hair flying. And stopped, as if she'd been frozen. Then she buckled, one hand reaching for her throat, and glared at her father.
"What did you do?" she gasped. "My throat feels... You did something!"
The Count rubbed his forehead and pinched the bridge of his nose.
"Lackey! And don't call me that! You know how I hate that!"
There was a brief scream from one of the lesser vampires behind them. Agnes couldn't remember his name. It was probably Fenrir or Maledicta or something. But she did recall that he preferred to be known as Gerald. He sagged to his knees, clawing at his throat. None of the other vampires looked very happy either. A couple of them were kneeling and groaning to the bewilderment of the citizens.
"I don't feel very well," said the Countess, swaying slightly. "I did say I didn't think wine was a good idea."
The Count turned and stared at Agnes. She took a step back.
"It's you, isn't it?"
he said.
"Of course it is," moaned Lacrimosa. "You know that old woman put herself somewhere, and she must have known Vlad was soppy on that lump."
"She's not in here, is she?" said Perdita.
"Don't you know?" Agnes thought, backing away again. "Well, I don't think she is. But is it me doing the thinking? Look, she's hidden herself in that priest. We know it." "No, we don't. You just thought that would be a smart thing for her to do, because everyone would think she's hiding in the baby. Why don't you just crawl back into your coffin and rot, you slimy little maggot?" Agnes said.
It wasn't that good, but impromptu insults are seldom well-crafted. Lacrimosa leapt at her, but something else was wrong. Instead of gliding through the air like velvet death, she lurched like a bird with a broken wing. But fury let her rear up in front of Agnes, one claw out to scratch. Agnes hit her as hard as she could, and felt Perdita get behind the blow as well. It shouldn't have been possible for it to connect. The girl was quick enough to run around Agnes three times before it could. But it did. The people of Escrow watched a vampire stagger back, bleeding. The mayor raised his head. Agnes went into a crouch, fists raised.
"I don't know where Granny Weatherwax went,"
she said. "Maybe she is in here with me, eh?" A flash of mad inspiration struck her, and she added, in Granny's sharp tones, "And if you strike me down again, I'll bite my way up through your boots." "A nice try, Miss Knit," said the Count, striding towards her, "but I don't think so." He stopped, clutching at the gold chain that was suddenly around his neck. Behind him, the mayor hauled on it with all his weight, forcing the vampire to the ground. The citizens looked at one another and all moved at once. Vampires rose into the air, trying to gain height, kicking at clutching hands. Torches were snatched from walls. The night was suddenly full of screams. Agnes looked up at Vlad, who was staring in horror. Lacrimosa was surrounded by a closing ring of people. "You'd better run," she said, "or they'll..." He turned and lunged, and the last thing she saw was teeth.